says in the end of the first parak in Bava Kamma that we want to be chabad somebody who passed away. The highest form of kibbud is to dedicate learning and honor that person. So one of the regular participants of the shiur, Rabbi Spiegel, who's been coming for years and years, has yard site this week for his father who is a Talmid Chacham. So I'd like to dedicate the learning tonight in his memory. The Chazon Ish in his Sefer HaNarachayim has a very interesting section which doesn't correspond to anything in the Shulchan Aruch. The Chazon Ish in HaNarachayim has everything in the order of the Shulchan Aruch. He starts at that in Tzibas Yadayim in the morning, then he has about the Brachas in the morning, then he has about Tzitzis and Tefillin and Kriya Shema, Shmon Esrei, and Shabbos and Yom Kippur and everything. And in between Pesach and Shavuos he has an essay which doesn't correspond to anything that appears in the Shulchan Aruch, but rather he tries to collect all of the passages that appear in the Gemara with respect to the Seder and the Sinas HaTorah. Exactly, historically, what happened at Har Sinai, what happened before and after Har Sinai, how exactly did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give the Torah to the Jewish people? Of course, the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, as we know, that Moshe Kibul Torah Mi-Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah at Har Sinai. In Chassidus Shesvarim, they say Al Derech HaRemez, Dushas Levi, Rav Levi Yitzchak Berditchev, and others have a comment on that Mishnah. Moshe Kibul Torah Mi-Sinai, that the Mishnah is not telling us the place where the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, but rather telling us why was Moshe Rabbeinu chosen as the one to be given the Torah? Because he was the greatest honor. Chumash tells us Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest honor Mikol HaAdam. He was the greatest Talmid Chacham. And Medrash tells us why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose to give the Torah to Har Sinai? Why not give the Torah on taller mountains? Because the taller mountains were arrogant. All of the mountains were fighting with each other, vying with each other. Let HaKadosh Baruch Hu give the Torah on me. Har Sinai was a humble mountain that wasn't involved in the competition. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said he wants to give the Torah Dafkan Har Sinai because of its humility, whatever that Medrash means. So the Chassidus Sfarim write that it's interesting, Rav Chaim Volozhin writes the same as well. Greatest anti-chosid writes the same as well in his commentary on Pirkei Avos. At Al Derech HaRemez, the Mishnah means the same. Moshe Kibul Torah Mi-Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was chosen to be the Mekabel HaTorah. Why? Mi-Sinai, because he had the same midah that Har Sinai had. Namely, that he had this midah Swanova that Har Sinai was known for. Rav Chaim Volozhin goes ahead to explain what this is all about. So he says, he gives you a mashal, that if you have a cup, you have different cups. They're all the same size, the same height. Depending on how thick the walls of the cup are, you will be able to determine how much liquid you will be able to contain inside the base kibul of the cup. So the thicker the walls are, so the more room the walls take up, so the less room there is inside the base kibul. The thinner the walls are, so the more room there is inside, the more you will be able to contain inside the cup. What if the walls of the cup, the defanas of the kedera, the defanas of the kli, are just mathematical lines? They're just mashu, less than a mashu. They're only mathematical lines, just imaginary lines. There's nothing there. So if the mamish don't take up any space at all, so then such a cup will be able to contain 100% the maximum of the volume of that whole area. So he explains that that's what the medrash means to say, that a person who is a baal gaiva, who holds a lot from himself. So there's the thickness of the walls of his clay kibul. Every person has a mind that can serve as a clay kibul to contain a lot of Torah, a lot of knowledge, and a lot of information. So the more a person holds from himself, so the less room there is inside of his mind to be mekabel Torah. And the less the person holds from himself, so the more room there is inside. So that's why the Medrash tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the greatest donor, that he didn't hold from himself at all. So he had the maximum capacity of being the Kabbalah Torah. That's what the Mishnah tells us, Moshe Kibul Torah Mi-Sinai. But the simple reading of the Mishnah, we all know what it means. It means Moshe was in the Kabbalah Torah at Har Sinai. When was he in the Kabbalah Torah Har Sinai? These were the first 40 days. Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai for 120 days. The first unit of 40 days started immediately after Shavuos. So in those 40 days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe Rabbeinu the whole Torah. Does that really mean that nothing new was given to Moshe Rabbeinu later? This is clearly not correct. We read in the Chumash Beferish that there were at least three dinim that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know and were a great surprise to him when he found out later. The one was the din of Parshas Nachlos, when the old man Slavcha died and he left no sons, he only left daughters, and they came to ask Hashaila whether the daughters are entitled to inherit from the father or not. Moshe Rabbeinu said he didn't know. He had to consult HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it wouldn't appear that he had known it and he had forgotten it. He didn't forget it. He just never heard it in the first place. So clearly the laws of Yerusha were not given in their entirety, or perhaps not given at all, to Moshe Rabbeinu. The second is the din of the Megadeh. We read in the Chumash in the end of Parshas Emor that one of the Jewish people cursed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what to do. He wasn't sure whether it was considered a tremendous avera to curse HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they should give him the maximum punishment. But the Rabbeinu Shalom just sits up there in heaven and he laughs. It's a big joke. What do I care? Let him curse all he wants. It doesn't bother him. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know exactly how to place this into the proper perspective. Didn't know whether the fellow deserves any punishment at all. So they had to put him in prison. And then they had to ask about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what punishment does he deserve? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, maximum punishment. But this is considered a terrible avera. It's not considered a joke. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of Parshas Emor, the Pesukim are so unclear, so the commentaries explain what it means. If a person shoots somebody else's animal, so he has to pay. If a person murders a human being, so it's not only it's not enough to make him pay. You have to give him the death penalty. That's considered a terrible avera. The punishment is always in proportion to how serious the avera is. And the Chumash there at the end of Parshas Emor gives various averes and mentions the various unction. And the Megadeh gets the maximum punishment because one who curses Hashem is considered an extremely serious aver because it'll have a terrible, the Rosh Hashanah sits in heaven and laughs it all away, but it'll have a terrible effect on the society and all the other people. And we read in the Torah that there was at least a third instance when Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know at all what the din was, namely in the Parsha of the Mekoshesh, that they knew that it was prohibited to be Mechal Shabbos, that din was given. They knew that one is Mechal Shabbos, one who does Malach on Shabbos should be punished with Onish Misa, with the death penalty, but they didn't know which form of death. They always knew that there were four forms of Misa's Bezin, Skil, Srefa, Herik, or Chenik, but they didn't know which one Mechal Shabbos deserves. This is considered one of the most serious sins, and therefore should require the most Chomedika form, the most serious form of death penalty. Or is it a lighter aver? And true, it deserves a death penalty, but perhaps a lighter form of honor. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know until that was given to him. So the Ramban on Chumash points out that when the Talmud tells us, and the tradition has it, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught all of the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, because in the Chumash, in the text of the Torah itself, we read that there were at least three dinim, and perhaps even more, that were not given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. What about the rest of the dinim? What about the rest of the dinim? Should we assume that all of the dinim from A to Z were given to Moshe Rabbeinu with these several exceptions? Everything was given to Moshe Rabbeinu Hasina? Or perhaps we should assume that the dinim were given in Rosh Hashanah, outlines of the dinim. Perhaps the basic halachas of all of the Taryag Mitzvahs were given to Moshe Rabbeinu in the 40 days on Hasinai, and perhaps they were elaborated upon later over the course of the 40 years of traveling in the desert during the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Chazon Ish points out that if you read the Chumash, the Psukim will often introduce a din by saying, Vadabra Shama Moshe b'Har Sinai Leimach. Kodesh Baruch Hu said this to Moshe Rabbeinu when he was at Har Sinai. And often the Chumash will introduce a din by saying, Vadabra Shama Moshe me'oil moed leimach. This din was given to Moshe Rabbeinu in Ohel Moed. Ohel Moed means the Mishkan that was traveling with the Jewish people for the 40 years. And sometimes the Chumash will introduce the dinah by saying, "Vadabra Shama Moshe, the Arvis Moyel label." Arvis Moyel was the last station where Bnei Israel stayed during the course of the 40 years of traveling before they crossed over into Eretz Israel, and that's where Moshe Rabbeinu died, in Arvis Moyel. So you read in the Chumash, and it becomes very clear, as the Apikursim have been saying for so many years, that the Chumash is a composite of three different texts. There's an A text, then a B text, then a C text. There's a text of Har Sinai, and there was a text of Arvis Moyel. There was a text of Ohel Moed, and a text of Arvis Moyel. And the Chumash that we have is a combination sometimes of this text, sometimes the second text, and sometimes the third text. So the Tanoim had a dispute as to what to make of this. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu to write in the Chumash a combination sometimes of this text, sometimes the other text, and sometimes the third text? So Rabbi Akiva's opinion was, and that's the view that Rashi quotes on Chumash, that the entire Torah was given, all of the Taryag Mitzvos, of course, minus a few. You have to leave out the Parshas Nachlos and the Parshas Megadri and the Parshas Mekoshesh, perhaps a few others we don't know about, but at least those few. The entire, the bulk of the Torah, the Tariag Mitzvahs, everything was given to Moshe Rabbeinu during the 40 years that he was in Har Sinai, starting the day after Shavuos. And everything was given from A to Z. Klaloseim, Pratoseim, Dikukeim, all of the details of the halachas were given. All of the details of those halachas were repeated again during the 40 years of traveling in the desert, in Ohel Moed. And all of the dinim were repeated again the third time in Arvas Moed. And each time HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated the dinim to Moshe Rabbeinu with a different nusach. There was a different text each time. And each time all of the dinim were given. And then at the end of the 40 years, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that when writing down the laws of tzitzis, of tefillin, of shabbos, of kashrus, of taras ha-mishpacha, he told Moshe Rabbeinu sometimes write the first text, sometimes write the second text, and sometimes he told him to write the third text. And basically, if he would have used any one of the texts, that text would have included all of the details of the halacha anyway, because each time these halachas were given, they were given in their entirety. Whenever parsha was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was given in its entirety. Each time it was given. Rabbi Shmuel disagrees and he says that doesn't make any sense. Why should Kadosh Baruch Hu give the dinim to Moshe Rabbeinu three different times with three different texts? If each time everything was given from A to Z in Tzitzis, and from A to Z in Tfilin, from A to Z in Kriya Shema, and from A to Z in Shemitah, and from A to Z in Taras HaMishpach, why should he give it three times? That must be, Rabbi Shmuel says, that the first time HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu the dinim, he didn't give all of the details. The second time he gave it a little more detail, and perhaps the third time he gave it in its entirety. So those dinim that weren't, those mitzvahs that weren't told to Moshe Rabbeinu in their entirety until the third time they were given, until the nevuah that he got in Arvas Moed, he had to use that text. If he were to use text A or text B, it would be incomplete. It wouldn't have all the dinim. Those dinim that Moshe Rabbeinu had been given during the 40 years, that it were begun at Har Sinai and were completed in the middle of the traveling in the desert when he got his nevuah in Ohel Moed, so Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the second text. There was no third text. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to give a third text if everything was given right in the second time? And those dinim that were given at Har Sinai in their entirety, so there was no need for a second text, no need for a third text. So Rabbi Shmuel claims that's the explanation to this puzzle, to this mystery, why the Torah records, why the Torah makes it clear that the Chumash, as we have it, the various mitzvahs, we sometimes use the text that was given to Har Sinai, to Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai, sometimes use the text the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated it to Moshe Rabbeinu in Ohel Moed, and sometimes the third text at the Arvas Moed. But that's the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, and the Gemara in Chagiga Davov shows that this was a major dispute among the Tanoim. Half of the Tanoim felt like Rabbi Shmuel, that the Torah was given not fully in its entirety to Har Sinai. All of the mitzvahs were given, but not all the mitzvahs were given in all of their details. And then more details were given later, and even more details were given later. And the text that we have always is the latest text that has the final word on all the mitzvahs. Sometimes it was the first text, sometimes the second, and sometimes it was only completed at the third occasion. And the more popular view, the Gemara really doesn't have too much of a difference halacha l'maaseh based on. The Gemara has some slight differences in Chagiga Davov, nothing really drastic that we can say over tonight. The Gemara has very slight variations. The Gemara says that each nafkamina is not really muchach. One could dingzach on each one of the nafkaminas. But the Gemara does present that it was a major dispute among the Tanakh. And the more popular view, which was made popular by Rashi in his commentary on Chumash at the beginning of Parshas Bahar, Rashi writes, why does the Torah write V'adam Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu told the din to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai? Why in Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu state that this din of Shemitah was given at Har Sinai? So Rashi explains why, to teach you that all of the din were given in their entirety at the Har Sinai, because the laws of Shemitah were never repeated later at all. You don't find the laws of Shemitah mentioned later on in Chumash at all. So just like the laws of Shemitah were given in their entirety the first time at Har Sinai, so too all of the other mitzvahs were given in their entirety at Har Sinai. It's interesting, the Gemara in Gittin and Daf Sama presents a dispute among the Tanoim regarding the Ksivas HaTorah. This is regarding the Mesiras HaTorah. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated the dinim to Moshe Rabbeinu, did he give Moshe Rabbeinu all of the details of each and every single mitzvah at Har Sinai, or did he give more details as time went on until the end of the 40 years? Gemara in Gittin Dav Samach discusses another issue. When did Moshe Rabbeinu write down the laws of the Torah? We know from the Chumash, the way the Talmud understands the Pesukim in the Chumash, that all of the laws of the Torah, all the parashiyos of the Chumash, and all the mitzvahs were first told to Moshe Rabbeinu orally to deliver to Bnei Yisrael orally. And only after he delivered the message to Bnei Yisrael, he told them the mitzvahs, then he was commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to write it down. The Gemara says, Kol HaTorah Kula, the entire Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated it to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe comes Omer V'Koyser. Moshe Rabbeinu would repeat the message to Bnei Yisrael, deliver the Nevuah, and then he would write it down. Why is this so? So the Mefarshim explained, because a Nevuah means a message which is delivered. As the Pasuk reads, Bari Niv Svasoy. Niv means to pronounce with your produce, Tenuva. So Tenuva means produce. Niv Ha'aretz or Niv Ha'peh, to speak words, it's called Niv Svasoy. So Nevuah means a message which is delivered by the Navi to the Bnei Yisrael. So first, Moshe Rabbeinu had to deliver the Nevuah to Bnei Yisrael, that it should be Chal Adin Nevuah, it should be considered Nevuah. And only after the message was delivered to Bnei Yisrael was Moshe Rabbeinu told to write it down. So the Talmud has a dispute, exactly when did he write down all of these parashas? They weren't given to Moshe Rabbeinu all at one time, they were given a little today, a little tomorrow, a little the next day, for 40 years, for 40 days, at Har Sinai, and then later on for 40 years. According to one time, and more details were given down. So was Moshe Rabbeinu commanded each time to deliver the Nevuah to Bnei Yisrael and then to write it down immediately after delivering the Nevuah to Bnei Yisrael that day? Or should we assume that the Torah was not given Megillah Megillah, it wasn't given Nitan the Ikasev, a parsha at a time, but rather all of the Nevuahs were delivered to Bnei Yisrael? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu only at the end of the 40 years, after he had already delivered all of the dinim from A to Z to Bnei Yisrael, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, now I want to dictate to you to write down a Sefer Torah, sometimes using the first text which you delivered to Bnei Yisrael right after Har Sinai, sometimes using the second text of Oral Moed, and sometimes using the third text that I just gave you the Nevuah now at Arvus Moed. That's the opinion of the other Tana in the Gemara in Gittin, that the Torah was Chasuma Nitma, the text that the Torah was given Nitan Lehikos was dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu word for word, letter for letter, for the purposes of being written down. It was only dictated after the conclusion of all the 40 years in such a way, it was dictated in such a way that it was given Belachatchila as an entire book. It wasn't dictated initially as a Megillah, a parsha at a time. What is the difference? What's the relevance? Halacha l'maisa? There's a historical issue as to whether the Torah was given to dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu to be written down each parsha at a time, or wasn't dictated for the purposes of being written down till the very end. So the Gemara raises a question regarding Kosvim Megillah Latino, the Islamic book. When you have young children learning in Cheder, learning in the Yeshiva, so they have to have a text of the Chumash in order to look inside. The Rebbe should be able to teach them. So the Gemara says that there is a principle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, which appears in the Chumash at the end of Parshas Kisisa, that he's not only giving him a Torah Shebichsav, he's giving him a Torah Shebalpeh. And the two Toros, it says several times in the Chumash the phrase Toros Soy, Mitzvah Soy, Chukos Soy, Besoros Soy. What do you mean Toros Soy? My two Toros? So the Gemara says, true. There's more than one Torah. There's a Torah Shebichsav, and there's a Torah Shebalpeh, and there is a distinction between the two, and the distinction must be maintained. And the Dvarim Shebichsav must remain Bichsav, it may not be recited Balpeh. And the Dvarim Shebalpeh must be transmitted Balpeh, it may not be transmitted Mitoch Haksav. So the Gemara prohibits the writing down of the Torah Shebalpeh for the purposes, if a person writes down private notes of what he hears from his Rebbe on Torah Shebalpeh, that was always permissible. Talmud speaks of Megillah's story, that various people had notes, private notes, but they would write down the Chidush Dinim that they were afraid that they would forget over the years. Those are private notes, but to write down the Torah Shebalpeh and to use the text to teach from it and to transmit the Torah Shebalpeh to the next generation, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu prohibited. He wanted the Torah Shebalpeh to be transmitted only Balpeh, orally, and he wanted the Torah Shebichsav to be transmitted Davki Mitoch Haksav. When the Rebbe teaches Torah Shebichsav, then after the children, he has to teach it with the children using a text and everybody looking inside that text. And the Talmud derives this from the Pasuk in the end of Parshas Kisisa that says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands of Moshe Rabbeinu Ksov L'chois HaDvarim Ha'ela, write down the Chamish HaChumash HaTorah, Ki Al-Pi HaDvarim Ha'ela Karati Yitcha Bris V'Es Yisrael. So the simple translation is, write down the Torah, the Chumash, because ki based on Afi Hadvarim Hayla, based on this text of the Chumash that I'm going to dictate to you now, I'm going to enter into a covenant with the Jewish people, make a Krisis Bris with Bnei Yisrael, as far as the Torah Shebichsav. So the Talmud comments in Gittin, all on the same daf, on daf Samach, that the Krisis Bris, the special covenant, singling out the Jewish people, was only made in connection with the Torah Shebichsav, in connection with the Oral Torah. The Torah Shebichsav is in writing, and it's open for all the nations of the world to read. The Talmud tells us in Gemara Soto, that after Yehoshua ben Nun led the Jewish people over the Yarden, had to write the entire Torah on the 12 stones in the city Gilgal, and have them open and available for any nations, any non-Jews who want to come and read them. The prohibition that the Talmud has regarding a non-Jew studying Torah, studying areas of Torah which are not related to their practice, the Talmud says that the seven mitzvahs been enough regarding the seven mitzvahs that apply to all the non-Jews. They're required to learn Torah. They have to find out what the laws are that relate to them. But regarding the remaining 606 mitzvahs, the Talmud says it's prohibited for a non-Jew to learn Torah. And yet, on the other hand, the Gemara says that Yehoshua ben Nun wrote the entire Chumash on the 12 stones in Gilgal, that all the nations of the world should read them. So how do these two things jive? The Gemara says, Yehoshua ben Nun wrote the Torah for the non-Jews to read, and the Gemara says they're prohibited to read it. So how can they read it? So the answer is given by many commentaries. The prohibition of the non-Jews to study Torah is limited only to the Torah Shebal Peh. The Torah Shebal Chsav is for everybody to read. So that's what prompted the rabbis to tell us that the Krisas Bris, the special covenant with the Jewish people that singles us out as a unique nation, is only in connection with the oral law with respect to the Torah Shebal Peh. The Torah Shebal Chsav, they have a right to read also. They have the King James translation. We're not permitted to hand them over a Sansino translation of the Talmud or the Medrash. That's what's prohibited. But for them to read the Chumash in the original or in translation, that's perfectly all right. So how does one read the Pasuk in the Chumash if we say that the Iker Krisas Bris, the main covenant of between HaKadosh Baruch and the Jewish nation, is made on the Torah Shebal Peh? If the Torah Shebichsav may be read by the non-Jews, it doesn't have to be observed by the non-Jews. They don't have to observe any more than their Sheva Mitzvahs. They don't have to keep the remaining 606 mitzvahs. But still they have a right to read the Chumash. So that's why the Talmud says that the main Krisas Bris, the Iker covenant between HaKadosh Baruch and the Jewish people, was made regarding the Torah Shebal Peh. So how does this read in the Pasuk, Sov L'chos Advar Moed? So apparently the Gemara understands the Pasuk to be read as follows. Write down, Moshe Rabbeinu is told, write down the Chamishu Chumashi Torah. Ki doesn't mean because, but rather means despite the fact that. Rashi and Chumash will often quote from the Gemara that the word ki, mishamish bedalad mishamish, the word ki has four different meanings. And then Rashi explains it really has more than four different meanings, but several of the additional meanings are fall under the categories, fall under the basic heading of the four meanings. But in addition to all the meanings that Rashi quotes, the Ibn Ezra points out that several times in Tanakh we find the word ki used in a sense just the opposite from because. It's used in the sense of despite the fact that. For example, also in the end of Parshas Kisisa, we read the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry at the Jewish people because they sinned with the Chet HaEgel, and he wanted to remove his Shechina from the Jewish people. He wanted only to be mashu his Shechina on Moshe Rabbeinu and wipe out the Jews. So Moshe Rabbeinu prays to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should stay with the Jewish people, he should remain with them, because ki am kisheyorifu, because they are a tough nation and they always sin. So that's the reason why he should stay with Bnei Yisrael, because they are a tough nation. Shouldn't that be the reason why he should want to run away from the Jewish people? So how does Moshe Rabbeinu argue ki am kishayorifu? So the Ibn Ezra explains that the word ki means afal pisha, despite the fact that they are am kishayorif, nonetheless he should stick it out with them and stay with the Jewish people. Well, similarly we have the pasuk that we recite before ki ashoifer, the pasuk from Tehillim, tuv tam v'das lamdeni kivim mitzvasecho ha'emonti. Gavin HaMelech pleads with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tell me the reasons for the mitzvahs despite the fact that I have emunah. I'm going to fulfill the mitzvah anyway, but tuv tam v'das lamdeni, teach me the tameh mitzvah. It's always interesting to know the tameh mitzvah, even though we plan to do the mitzvah anyway. Gavin HaMelech doesn't say, tell me the reason for the mitzvah, otherwise I won't keep that mitzvah. Any mitzvah that doesn't make any sense to me, I won't keep. No, he says, I have emunah. The mitzvah secher ha'emanti. But despite the fact, ki b'mitzvah secher ha'emanti, despite the fact that I have emunah, and I plan to do the mitzvah b'tmimus anyway, tell me the tameh ha'mitzvah. for the sake of Talmud Torah. So here we have such a similar interpretation being given by the Talmud. The Pasuk says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, Ksov l'chayas ha'dvar ma'ele, write down the Chamisha Chumshe Torah, Ki al-pi ha'dvar ma'ele, despite the fact that al-pi, having the connotation of bal-peh, al-pi ha'dvar ma'ele karati itcha bris ves Yisrael. The Ike Krisis bris with the Jewish nation, singling them out and making them unique, is really in connection with the Torah Shabbat. The oral law, but nonetheless, I ask of you, Moshe Rabbeinu, to write down the Torah Shabbat. Don't tie about this is something for all the nations of the world. So why should I bother to write it down? Why don't you get yourself a goy to write it down? What do I have to do with the Torah Shabbat? No, nonetheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks him, write down the Torah Shabbat. It's because of that Gemara that over the generations there has developed a tendency among religious Jews to downgrade the importance of learning Tanakh. Because the Gemara says that the Ike Krisis Bris with the Jewish people is on the Torah Shebaal Peh. And the Tanakh, that's for all the nations of the world. So that doesn't single us out as anybody special. And that's why by religious Jews, they don't study Tanakh so much. And that's what one of the Tanoim in the Gemara told his Talmidim, Minu b'neichem b'higoya. You should prevent your children from studying Higoya. So in modern Hebrew, we usually use the word Higoya to mean logic. So this Tana told his children, he told his students and his children, he shouldn't let them study philosophy or study logic. That's perhaps what the translation of the word is. So Rashi doesn't know that. Rashi in his commentary on that Gemara, in the middle of Bracha, says, Higoya means Tanakh. Don't let your children study Tanakh. What's wrong with Tanakh? He doesn't explain what's wrong. So the Tzlach, the Nebi Yehuda, in his commentary on Gemara Bracha, says, the Tzlach lived, the Nebi Yehuda lived in the, in the late 1700s. So already there was a movement of Haskalah going on. So who were the people who were studying Tanakh? The people who didn't have Emuna, the people who didn't believe in Torah Shebaal Peh, they were studying Tanakh. The people who were Ma'amidim in Torah Shebaal Peh didn't bother to study Tanakh so much. Only the big Rabbanim studied Tanakh. The Hamoy Naam, the plain people, didn't know any Tanakh. So the Nebi Yehuda says, he's guessing that probably in the days of Rashi, or perhaps even in the days of the Tana, Rashi interpreted the Gemara like this, there must have been such a phenomenon also, that there were people who were not Ma'amidim who were studying Tanakh. So if you're going to have your children study Tanakh, who knows who the teacher is going to be? If you're going to teach them Tanakh, that's wonderful. But if you're going to send them to a school for the sake of studying Tanakh, you may have a teacher who's not a Ma'amid, you may have a teacher who's an Apikurz. If you study Mishnayos or Gemara, it's far-fetched, the Nebi Yehuda writes. If you're going to have an Apikurus, one who doesn't believe, who's going to be teaching Mishnah or Talmud. But in Tanakh, you can never tell. So this whole attitude that developed over the generation, a very strange attitude, a very, very strange attitude, is all based on that passage in the Gemara in Gittin, Dav Samach, where the Gemara says that the main Krisis Bris, the covenant that singles out the Jewish people from the other nations of the world, was made in connection with the Torah Shebaal Peh. And the Talmud also derives from that same pasuk, Ksav l'cho es ha'dvarim ha'ela, the word ha'ela is a miyud. Only write this down. Ki, despite the fact that al-pi ha'dvarim ha'ela, these dvarim ha'ela are different from the other dvarim ha'ela. These things have to be transmitted bal-peh, al-pi. And the other things have to be transmitted mitach ha'ksav. So the Gemara derives all of that from the same pasuk, that dvarim shebichsav, whatever was intended by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, be part of the oral text, to be part of the written text of the Chumash, has to be transmitted to the next generation. Iksav, you're permitted to quote a pasuk bal peh. You can say kriyashma bal peh. You can recite Ashrei in the Volatil. You can recite Pesukah Dezimra bal peh. But if you want to teach Torah, the Rebbe wants to teach Torah to the children, the Chumash or the Tanakh has to be taught mitach haksav from a written text. And if he wants to transmit the Torah shebaal peh, the oral Torah, he's supposed to transmit a doctor orally and not by using a text. They're permitted to write notes and he's permitted to use notes, but the method of instruction should be dafke orally as opposed to studying from a text. The Gemara just says in the days of Rabbi Yudah HaNossi, and later they saw that the Torah, the oral Torah, was going to be forgotten if they'll just, if they will rely on everybody writing his own notes, and there won't be any written text used for the purpose of teaching. So that's why they said that Eis Lasis Hashem Eferet HaRasecha, that for the sake of preserving the whole tradition of the oral Torah, they found it necessary to allow the writing down of the Torah Shebaal Peh for the purpose of using it as a text. And the question is, how can they do that with Sof Kol Sof isn't the Nisim? So that's a major question that the Poskim discuss. When are you permitted to violate an Avera for the sake of preserving Judaism? Let's say the Reform Rabbi tells the Balabatim, drive to Shul in order to maintain Shabbos, in order to maintain Jewish identity. So the Orthodox say, not allowed to do that. How are we not allowed to do it? We do it all the time. Here, sit and I use a Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish is all Torah Shabbat Peh. Everybody sits and studies Gemara. We all study Mishnahs. We all study Torah Shabbat Peh from a written text. So aren't we doing the same thing that the Reformed rabbis are doing? The Orthodox are doing the same as the Reformed. We're violating the laws of the Torah for the sake of saving the Torah. So everybody's doing the same thing? So that's what the commentaries on the Gemara have a hard time explaining. Why was this permissible? And when, what are the rules and regulations of when you're permitted to violate laws of the Torah for the sake of preserving the Torah? So the Gemara derives from that pasuk this principle that when you're instructing Torah Shebichsav, it has to be done from a text. So the Gemara in Gittin on that same daf raises a question. Let's say the little children come to Cheder, in the first grade, the second grade, and they're going to read from the Chumash. So the Rebbe is going to teach Parshas Lech Lecha, he's going to teach Parshas Vayikra, whatever they teach in the younger grades. Does the halacha require that every little child has to come with a whole Tanakh? Because if he doesn't come with a whole Tanakh, it's not considered a proper text. So the poor kid has to schlep a whole Tanakh to school every day. So probably the answer is, the Gemara says, no, whole Tanakh, the Tanakh consists of 24 books. You don't require that he should carry all the 24 books in one volume. There are the Chamish Shuchim Shitorah Bereish Shmos Veikva Midbar Dvarim, and another 19 books that adds up to the sum total of Chof Dalet Kisvek, that is 24 Svar. So this is for sure, the Gemara says, it's not required that you have to have all 24 books that it should be considered the proper text. It's certainly permissible to have a Chumash Bereishis. If the Rebbe just wants to teach Parshas Lech Lecha, all the child has to bring to school is a Chumash Bereishis. He doesn't have to bring Shmos and Vayikra all in one volume. Bereishis is a safer Shalom. But the Talmud questions even that. Do we require of the little child that he has to come to school with the whole Chumash Bereishis? Maybe it's sufficient if he just comes with a pamphlet that has Parshas Lech Lecha. So the Gemara has a dispute about this. For the Kaisvim Megillah Latinat L'Islamit Boy, for the sake of the children, it's easier for them to come just with a Parshas Lech Lecha, or with a Parshas Vayikra, with a Parshas Bamidbar, whatever they're learning. Do we say that if you have one Parsha, that's called Mitach HaKsav? Or should we say no? It's only called a proper text of a Chumash if you have a whole Sefer Shalom, you have a whole book. So the Gemara says that perhaps this should depend on this historical question as to how the Torah was dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu for the purpose of writing down. It was certainly dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu for the purpose of being transmitted orally to Bnei Yisrael. Every din that he wrote down, he had to first deliver orally to Bnei Yisrael. That's what the Gemara says. Moshe Oimer B'Koseif. First Moshe Rabbeinu delivered the prophecy, he delivered the dinim to Bnei Yisrael, the message, and then after it was Chalam and the din Nevuah, Borin Yisrael, then he was permitted Ersh to write it down. So the Gemara has this question, when did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu to write down the Torah? Was it done each time when he was given a din? And he delivered the Bnei Yisrael orally, then he had to write it down immediately? Or didn't he begin to write anything down until the end of all the 40 years when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, write a Sefer Shalom of Bereishis, and write a Sefer Shalom of Shmos? And anything less than the Sefer Shalom was never written down because it wouldn't be considered a proper ksav. It's an incomplete text. So the Gemara suggests that perhaps this issue as to whether Kosvim Megillah Latinat L'Islamivoy, whether you consider a parsha, if you only have a parsha, it doesn't even mean a whole parsha's Lech Lecha, or a whole parsha's Vayera, or a whole parsha's Chesar. A parsha means from a psucha to a stuma, from a stuma to a stuma, or from a psucha to a psucha. Parsha means a paragraph in the Chumash. So that's where the Gemara raises the question, were these parshios written at different times in the life of Moshe Rabbeinu? So every time you write a paragraph, that's considered a text, and you can read from a parsha, and that's called reading B'Torah HaKsav. Or should I say no? That anything less than a Sefer Shalom, anything less than an entire book, should not be considered B'Torah HaKsav. The Gemara comes to the conclusion that it really doesn't matter. Historically, even if one should assume historically that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote each parsha separately, but sof kol sof, at the end of the 40 years, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to attach together all of these parshas and to make them into a Sefer Shalom, to make one book out of them. So that the sof, at the end of the 40 years, they constituted one book of Bereishis, one book of Shmos. So halacha l'maaseh, the Gemara says that anything less than a Sefer Shalom, anything less than a whole Chumash Bereishis or a whole Chumash Shmos is considered Baal Peh. It's not considered reading the Peh HaKsav, because the Ksav is missing. It's missing so much. And nonetheless, the Gemara says, even though it's really considered teaching Chumash Baal Peh, if you have anything less than a Sefer Shalom, but if the teacher feels, if the Rebbe feels that it's too difficult for the young children to schlep a whole bereshis, a whole sefer shalom to the yeshiva to learn from, just going to throw them off. So we are makel, just like we today are makel, and we allow the Torah Shebaal Peh to be transmitted from one generation to the other, using written text, using mishnayos and using gemaras. So too already in earlier generations, in the days of the Tanaim, they permitted the teaching of children Torah Shebichsav from something which wasn't really a text, because it was less than a sefer shalom. And the Gemara says that that's only, the Shulchan Aruch says that that's only for the purpose of education. If it's necessary for the sake of education, for the children, it's a great tzorach gadol, it's too difficult to require of the young children that they should carry a whole sefer, then we have this kula, l'shem limud hatorah. What happens if it's not necessary for the sake of education? For example, the Shulchan Aruch quotes that some people used to have written on a talazekel, gedilim tasalachot. They would have a half of a pasuk or a whole pasuk written. Some people would write on the sukkah, Chagas Sukkot Tasa L'Chashir Asyam, and they would write the psukim of the sukkah. Some people would have a fancy esrog box, and they would write the L'Kachtum L'Chem B'Yom Arish, they would write a pasuk on that. Some people write psukim on the paroiches. Some people write psukim on the mentalach, on the sefer Torah. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch that that's not really proper. That to write, if you're interested in writing a pasuk, you should write the whole sefer. Right, the whole sefer shalom, it'll lose its meaning. And you want the balabatim to see specifically one pasuk. They should concentrate on one pasuk. So if you feel that it's absolutely essential for educational purposes, then the Gemara says that it's permissible, like for the sake of educating the young children, because it's too difficult to give the child a sefer shalom, a whole book of Bereshis, and just to teach one section. So the Gemara says, we're makel, we allow them to come with a parshas lech lech on their hands, just a small pamphlet. But if it's not so absolutely necessary for educational purposes, just for design purposes, to have psukim hang on a sukkah, so the Mogen Avraham says in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch that it's not proper, it's not permissible. He gives two reasons. First of all, it's going to rain in the sukkah, and all of these psukim are going to fall down in the rain on the floor, and they're going to get all dirty, and they're going to be thrown out in the garbage. That's reason number one. And reason number two, even if nothing is going to get dirty, you have this beautiful talazek, or you have a beautiful esrog box, and so on, you have a beautiful poroiches, it's not going to rain on, it's not going to get dirty, but still, since it's less than a sefer shalem, and it's not really so crucial for educational purposes, so the Mogen Avraham quotes from the Gemara that that's not really proper. So again, the Gemara comes to the conclusion in Gittin that this historical question as to when did Moshe Rabbeinu write down the Torah, whether he wrote down each parsha as he was as it was dictated to him orally right after he delivered it, but nothing was written down until the end of the 40 years. So the Gemara says that it really doesn't matter for our purposes, because sof kol sof, at the end of the 40 years, the whole Torah was put all together. So the din, strictly speaking, is that that you're not permitted to write a section at a time. There is a significance, though, even today, that the Torah Shebaal Peh is being transmitted. Even today, that the Torah Shebaal Peh is being transmitted, Nitoi Chaksav, and all the yeshivas, we don't give a shir Baal Peh. We read a text of Mishnayos, or a text of a Gemara, a text of a Rama. We always teach everything from a text. So still, the halacha says, there still is a masorah of Torah Shebaal Peh. We shouldn't think that we no longer have a tradition of Torah Shebaal Peh. There's still a tradition, but the tradition is not as strong as it was at the time that the masorah is being transmitted Baal Peh. This is relevant halacha lemaisa, and a very important area. We find in the Talmud that in every generation when a shaila was posed, so the Chachamim in that generation paskin whatever they saw, however they saw fit. And if in a later generation, five generations after the shaila was already decided upon, somebody decides that he should paskin fakir, so he has the right to paskin fakir. And then five generations later, they have the right to reverse the psak and go back to the original psak, or give a third psak on the same issue. You have mishnayos like that. The Mishnah has a Mishnah Rishayna, and a Mishnah Achrayna, and a Bezin Shalachrayim Amru. You have many times in the Mishnah, the Tanaim originally used the Paskin one way, and that was accepted all over in Eretz Yisroel. Then in a later generation, Bezin Shalachrayim Amru, that's called in the Gemara, Mishnah Achrayna. Later Tanaim got together and they decided to reverse the Pesach. And sometimes later it was reversed to a third position, sometimes reversed back to the original position. So in every generation, they had the right to Paskin the way they saw fit. How long did this last? That you have a right to paskin how you see fit. What if we today decide we don't like what it says in the Mishnah? We don't like what it says in the Gemara. So the Gemara makes a statement. This is a catch over here. The Gemara makes a statement that Ravina and Rav Ashi, who were the last of the Amoraim, are considered, they are labeled as Sof Horor. That's the end of Paskin. Horor means the Paskin. That's the end of Paskining. And nobody after them has their... They're the ones who wrote this. Ravina and Rav Ashi were the ones who wrote... They're the ones who edited and compiled the Babylonian Talmud. The Palestinian Talmud Yerushalmi was written several generations earlier, was completed several generations earlier. The Talmud Babli was completed by Ravina Rav Ashi, the generation after them. So it appears in the Talmud, this phrase, this statement at the end of Bava Metzia, that Ravina Rav Ashi are considered Soif HaYiroh. They are the end of the Tekufa, the end of the period of people having the ability to pass Mishailas, and nobody who follows them has a right to disagree with anything that they concluded, anything that the Gemara comes to a conclusion on. Whereas in earlier generations, you have Amoraim had the right to disagree with Tanaim, and Tanaim had the right to disagree with earlier people, and later Tanaim had the right to disagree with earlier Tanaim. Why this discrepancy? That's not fair. What, are we so moronic? We have such weak heads that we have no right to disagree with the Chachamim of the Gemara, the Tanaim, and Amoraim? Why should that be so? So the answer is given by commentaries on the Rambam that runs as follows. The Masoirah of Torah Shebaal Peh was always transmitted Baal Peh. It was always transmitted orally. They always kept notes. That's what the Gemara refers to as Megillah Torah. But when the Shir was given, when the Torah was transmitted from one generation to the other, the Torah Shebaal Peh was transmitted orally. Up until the days of Ravina Rav Ashi. When the Talmud says in the second Perek in Tmura that the rabbi saw that the Torah is going to be forgotten, unless he cannot rely just on everybody keeping their own private notes. It's necessary that the rabbi should teach from a specific text, and everybody should use the same text to make sure that they all have the same thing in their notes. Otherwise, the rabbi is going to give a shiur and you're going to walk out with 100 different versions of what the rabbi said. So it's imperative to have davke text of the Torah Shebaal Peh to make sure that everybody got it straight, everybody understood it. So when did that begin? So Reb Yudah Nasi was the one who organized the Mishnayos. Did he write down the Mishnayos? Okay, maybe he wrote down the Mishnayos. Did they teach the Mishnayos from that written text right after Reb Yudah Nasi composed the Mishnayos? So there are different sources in the history books, and it's generally accepted that not. There are two versions of the letter that the Rabbeinu Shreiri Goyen wrote. Shreiri Goyen wrote a famous letter where he describes the way the Torah Shebaal Peh was transmitted from one generation to the other, and who the Tanoim and the Amoraim and the Gaonim were, and so on. So there are two readings in that letter, this crucial point, and the more accepted reading is that the Torah Shebaal Peh wasn't taught from a specific text until the days of the Hasimas HaTalmud, until the days of Ravina Rav Ashi. Up until then, although the Mishnayos were already edited, and they were written down, but when the Shir was given, it was given orally. The Rebbe would recite the Mishnayos orally, and he wouldn't have everybody study from a text. It would be transmitted orally. So as long as the Torah Shebaal Peh was still being transmitted Baal Peh, even though everybody had copies of notes, but as long as officially the Torah Shebaal Peh was transmitted Baal Peh, everybody was still in the level of, the highest level of Maser. Some understood better than others, but Fafal, that's Allah. The Torah was given to human beings, and the Chachamim in every generation have to pass it according to the way they understand. So you have clearly stated in the Talmud that all of the later rabbis had the right to reverse the decision of the earlier rabbis. Even the Amoraim had the right to reverse the opinions of the Tanoim. And many times in the Gemara you find an Amora makes a statement, I think the din should be this and that. And the Gemara says, how can he make such a statement? It's against the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Tiyufta de Abaye Tiyufta, he's wrong. So the commentary says, why is he wrong? Why doesn't he have a right to disagree with the Mishnah? So the Kesef Mishnah has a comment on the first page in the Rambam, Hilchos Mamrim. He says, he's not really wrong. If he insists, he can disagree with all the Tanoim also. Anybody up until Ravina Rav Ashi had a right to disagree with anybody before. Except all of the Amoraim made up their minds that they will really disagree with the Tanoim. Whenever there was a Shaila, see if they'd be fully convinced that the din has to be absolutely A. So even if you show them all the Tanaim said the din is B, they would insist that they're right and disagree with the Tanaim. You have a few places in the Talmud where Amoraim disagree with Tanaim, having no Tanis to support them. It's not that there was a dispute among Tanaim, and they followed the other Tan. The Ramban in the end of Bava Kama quotes, collects a few of these places. But in most of the cases, when a person issues an opinion, he's usually not so 100% convinced that it has to be this way, and if you say otherwise, it's absolutely ridiculous. He's not 100% convinced. It's a Netiyas Hadas. He thinks it makes more sense to say this way. But if you're going to show him that all the Tanoim say the other way, so that's what the Amoraim were mekabel upon themselves, they figured, well, if all the Tanoim say the other way, this time I'm not right. It's probably not correct, the idea that came into my head. But if they would insist on maintaining their position, even after being shown that all the Tanoim said Fakir, they would have the right to do that. And this, the Gemara says, is only up until the days of Rabbi Ravashi. What changed after Rabbi Ravashi? The change was a historical one which affected the halacha. From the time of Rabbi Ravashi on, they were teaching the Torah Shabbat Peh Mitoch HaKsav by using a specific text. Once you use a text, so it's no longer, the people are no longer really called Bali Masaira, because the Ika Masaira is only when it's being transmitted still Baal Peh, not when it's being transmitted Mitoch HaKsav. So true today, we still have a Masaira of the Torah Shabbat Peh, but it's not on the same high level of the Masara of Torah Shabbat Peh was, not high level learning, lower level learning. Al pi halacha, halachically, it's not considered in the same high level as it was during that period of history when the Torah Shabbat Peh was still being transmitted orally. So that's why people today no longer have the right to disagree with the Chachamim who preceded. That's what the Vilna Gaon points out. That the Chachamim, after the times of Rabbi Ravashi, do not have the right to paskin against anything. Because the Gemara, up until the days of the Hasidim, the Torah is still being transmitted about it. Does it make any difference regarding any given din, whether it appears in Torah Shabbat or it appears in Torah Shabbat? The Torah made such a fainted, such an insistence that so was at Barmaela, Kiyapia, Barmaela. This section of Torah should be transmitted in Tehraksa. That section has to be transmitted by Peh Boro. It appears that these are different Torahs, so two different chunks of the Torah. It was a very strong insistence from the strong faith that the Torah of Peh has to be made by Peh. They have a passport, but you're afraid it's going to be forgotten. The Torah of Peh has to be doctored and transmitted in Tehraksa. It would appear that there are, so there should be some differences between the two, not some capriciously, arbitrarily, after the Torah decided he's going to divide the Torah in half, and this half should be written and this half should be oral. So the commentaries on the Gemara collect the various Gemaras. The Gemara speaks about the difference. The Queen of God wrote an introduction to all of Torah Shabbat Peh that's called the Sicha HaKolel. The Gemara is a commentary on the Shabbat. Not to Shulchan Aruch, but rather to all of Torah Shabbat Peh. So this is the first issue that he raises. What, after all, is the difference between Torah Shabbat Chassav and Torah Shabbat Peh? If the Gemara places so much stress on keeping the two separate, and this has to be maintained by Peh, and this has to be transmitted dafke from a written text, where do we find halacha l'maaseh that there are any differences? So he starts to rattle off in the opening paragraph in his Psicha Kalalas about 10 Chiluki Halach is 10 differences between Torah Shabbat Chassav and Torah Shabbat Peh. Some of them are very indicative of the nature of the difference between the two. For example, I'll bring out one. Most of them are very detailed, but one of them is specifically very interesting. He quotes a Ran on the Rif. The Ran has a commentary on the Rif on Masechah Shabbos and Daf Ayin Gimel, where the Ran claims, and many other Rishonim say this as well, but the Ran writes it more explicitly than the others, that when a person violates an Avera, so the Torah says sometimes that he gets the punishment of Malkus, and sometimes the person gets the punishment of Misah. So the Ran postulates as a principle that a person only gets an Onesh Aguf, only gets a punishment of Malkus or Misah, if he violated an Avera which appears in the Chumash. If it's something that's beferish in the Torah Shabbat Chassav. But if the Avera that he violates is only a Torah Shabbat Peh Avera, it's a Halacha Moshe Misinai, something that we know based on a drasha from a Pasuk, so he says in such a case there wouldn't be any Onesh Aguf, the wouldn't be any malchus, there wouldn't be any misa. There's something very interesting. The Baal HaTanya in his Drosh HaSanchonish picks up this idea from the Ran and from the Rosh and Baal Kama as well. And he says that it would appear that there's a major difference between the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebalpeh. That the Torah Shebichsav was given to Moshe Rabbeinu by HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'midas HaGvura, with a stringent and a strict outlook on the world and on life. Whereas the Torah Shebalpeh was given b'midas HaChesed to soften the strictness of the Torah Shebalpeh. He gives a few mishorim. It says in the Chumash, Ayin Tachasayin. So if you read the Torah Shebichsav, it sounds pretty serious. And the Torah Shebalpeh softens the blow of the Ayin Tachasayin and says that it really means moment. It's not to be taken literally. And he quotes several other instances. The Torah says that when a person deserves Malkus, so the Bezin gives him 40 Malkus, and the Torah Shebalpeh took off one of the Malkus, softens the blow. You always find that the Torah Shebalpeh is softening the dinim of the Torah Shebichsav. The Torah Shebichsav was given with strictness, with gvura, with din. And the Torah Shebalpeh comes to be makel because it was given with midas achesed. Any din which is any prohibition which is only known through the Torah Shebalpeh, the Ran claims, cannot get an einish of malchus or an einish of misa, because the whole Torah Shebalpeh is given with midas achesed. So in the area of midas achesed, you cannot have any onshei aguf. So the Ran explains regarding Malachas. He says the Chumash only says not to do Malacha. The Torah Shebalpeh is explaining what the Chumash means. But the question is regarding, there are 39 Malachas that are prohibited on Shabbos. So 38 of them are really Malachas. We are doing some creative activity. What about carrying on Shabbos? The Gemara considers carrying on Shabbos a Malacha grua. From all the 39 Malachas, that's the weakest of all Malachas. Tosafot says that's why Masechah Shabbos starts with carrying, because we know that everybody carries on Shabbos. Some people carry their keys, some people carry. If there's no Erev at all, there's an Erev you can get, but if there's no Erev, for years and years before they ever had an Erev anyway, everybody carried keys and handkerchiefs and so on. So carrying was always a malacha that everybody was mezalzel on. Why? Because you're not really creating anything new. So why should that, people can't understand, why should that be considered a malacha? So the Mishnah, you start off Masechah Shabbos with the prohibition of carrying to be mechazik that day. So the Gemara asks, so how does Taka the Malach of carrying fit into the pasuk? It says, well, Sasekol Malacha. Malach means creative activity, like the Rabbeinu Shlom used creative activity when he made the world. He didn't carry anything from one place to the other. The Rabbeinu Shlom created everything Yesh Me'ayin. So how is carrying considered a Malach at all? So the Gemara says, it really doesn't fit in with the Chumash. It's a halacha of Moshe Messina. So the Ran raises the question, what's the nature of this halacha of Moshe Messina? Does the halacha of Moshe Messina tell me that despite the fact that I would have never dreamt of this in a million years, to say that when the Chumash says Laisase Kol Malacha, this should include also carrying, the halacha of Moshe Messina says that it is included. That word Malacha does include carrying as well. Or perhaps I should say no, that the phrase Malacha in the Chumash only applies to the other 38 activities which are creative, where you are accomplishing something. And this activity of carrying is a separate issur. It's not a Malacha. It's like tchumen. You're not permitted to go chutzal tchum. Chutzal tchum is not a malacha. It's a different issue. It's another prohibition. It doesn't fall under the category of malacha at all. So the Ran raises the question, what's the nature of the din of this halacha l'moshe b'sinai of the prohibition of carrying? Is it a halacha l'moshe b'sinai that reinterprets the pasuk that is included in malacha? Or should I say it's not included at all? It's a separate prohibition. It has nothing to do with malacha. So he says if it's a separate prohibition, then if a person carries on Shabbos, he should not be punished with Misa. And if a person carries on Yom Tov, he should not be punished with Malkus. And on Yom Tov, you're only permitted to carry the things that you need. Whatever you don't need, you're not allowed to carry. You have to empty your pockets out before Yom Tov also. If you need your key, if you need your handkerchief, or you need a machzor, that you can carry. But whatever you don't need, you're prohibited to carry. The Gemara says, if you carry on Yom Tov, you get Malkus. If you carry on Shabbos, you get Misa. So the Ran asks, why do you get Malkus? Why do you get Misa if the old prohibition is only known through the Torah Shebalpeh? So it shouldn't warrant any onesh aguf. There shouldn't be any punishment on Malkus on Misa. So he says, we must interpret the Gemara as implying that the Torah Shebalpeh here, the Halacha Moshe Sinai, declares that carrying is included in the Pasuk of Lasas Kol Malach. Because if it were a separate Halacha Moshe Mitzinai telling us a separate Isser, then there wouldn't be any Einish at all. Then he wouldn't deserve an Einish, neither a Malkus nor a Mis. That's the Ran that the Balatani quotes. The Ramban in his commentary on Chumash points out on Chumash Dvarim that we really have a mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah, Min HaTorah. We have the institution of Kriyas HaTorah. We meet every Monday and Thursday and Shabbos and Yom Tov and Shabbos afternoon and Yom Kippur, Chol HaMoed and Purim and so on, Chanukah. But this is only the Rabbanan. This is not a Kriyas HaTorah, Min HaTorah. When do we have Kriyas HaTorah on a biblical level? So the Shulchan Aruch says that the reading of Parsha Zohar once a year perhaps constitutes a biblical mitzvah. And we have in the Shulchan Aruch several other additional kriyos, special kriyas haTorah, that some poskim are of the opinion that they constitute a biblical mitzvah. So the Rambam points out that if you read the Psukim in the Chumash and Dvarim, it says, Hisham locha, Hishma nafshcha miyod, you should be very careful. Pentishka chasadvar mesherowu inecho, you should forget what happened, what you saw. Ten yisurim ulvalecho, lest you forget what you saw at Hasinai. Well, hidaitam levanecho, vilevnei vanecho, you should tell over to your children, to your grandchildren, Yom asher amarta lefnei Hashem alakecha b'chorev. You have to tell over to the future generations the whole story of Maimon Hasinai. The Ramban says, what does that mean? The simple reading of the pasuk is that there is a biblical mitzvah to lane, perhaps once a year, perhaps once every couple of years, to lane the story, to read from the Sefer Torah the story of Maimon Hasinai. The Magen Avraham in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch quotes, doesn't quote the Ramban, he quotes that there's a Medrash that appears in the Yalkut Shimoni that says the same as the Ramban, and the Medrash insists that this Kriyas HaTorah has to be fulfilled dafke by reading a text from the Chumash. You can't just tell the story of Maimon Hasinai to your children, you have to read it in Torah Ksav, and you have to read it in the presence of the Minyan. That's why the Pirkei Avot points out that on Shavuos night, many communities, they have a minig that people stay up all night and they learn, and then at the end of the night, they daven shachris, and they lay in and they daven musaf. So usually what happens is that after an hour or two, half the people go to sleep. After another couple of hours, more people go to sleep, and the only people who stay awake till the end of the night are the young kids. So the young kids who are just bar mitzvah, so that's okay. You have to have a minion of people who are just bar mitzvah. However, the people Gordon points out, the young boys who are just bar mitzvah, were they really bar mitzvah? How do we know that they're really bar mitzvah? So the Gemara says, in order to be a bar chiyuve, in order to be a godol, the person has to have, in addition to Yud Gimel Shem, has to be 13 years old. He has to be, his body has to be sufficiently developed, and he has to have shtei sairis. Has to be able, if he were to get married at that day, would he be able to have children? So the Gemara says that we usually assume that a boy who's 13 years old already has developed shtei sairis, and his body is sufficiently developed to father a child. But with respect to dinam deraisa, the Gemara says you have to be machna. We wouldn't allow such a person to write a sefer Torah the day after his bar mitzvah. We'll wait till we see that he's already mature and his beard is growing, or other parts of his body are he's getting taller, he's getting bigger. If he's a young bar mitzvah bachur, he looks a short, skinny little kid, so we wouldn't rely on this chazak and assume that he probably is already higia legadlos. So with respect to dinam deraisa, writing a sefer Torah, writing a get, or being a witness at a wedding, or being a witness on a get, or the Prima Gadim says constituting a minion for the purpose of Kriyas HaTorah and Shavuos, because that's a biblical requirement that you have to have the Kriyas HaTorah and Shavuos in the presence of a minion. Off of Parsha Zohar, you should make sure that you really have 10 people who for sure are bar mitzvah. So the Prima Gadim points out that in many communities, by the time they start the Daven Shacharis, the older people who are already fathers of children and grandfathers of children, who for sure are bar mitzvah, have already gone to sleep. And the only ones who are awake are those who are just barely bar mitzvah. So he says, we're not so sure that they're bar mitzvah. So you should make sure that you have a vadai minyan for the kriya. What is the significance of the story of Maimon Hasinai? That the Rabban Shalom told us, according to the Ramban and according to the Medrash, the Rabban Shalom commanded of us that we should read this story every year. So the Gemara tells us that the Maimon HaSinai was the act of Geirus, the act of conversion for the Jewish people. That how do we know today, how to accept a non-Jew to convert to become a Jew? In the same way our forefathers converted at the time of HaSinai. The Gemara says, Ma'ava Sehu, just like your forefathers on Nichnasu LeBris, how did they become Jewish? They had Milah in Eretz Mitzrayim right before they left, 7 weeks before Maimon HaSinai. Then the pasuk says they had to have tefillah and they had to bring a korban, had to go to mikveh and had to bring a korban at the occasion of Har Sinai. So too, throughout all the generations, we require for a non-Jew who wants to convert, they have to go to mikveh, they have to, if it's a man, they have to have a bris milah, and they have to bring a korban. If there is a Beis HaMikdash, they have to bring a korban. So that's one aspect of the Maamar HaSinai. The Maamar HaSinai, an act of geirus was done that accomplished that all of Bnei Yisrael became Jewish. So that is the, is that the major significance of the Maamar HaSinai, why we have to read the story every year, once a year, to remember how we became geirim in order to know how to make geirim in the future generations. Is that so important? So the commentaries on the Gemara say they think that it's something much more than that. The Gemara tells us, in the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam and Chavah, they had a perfect body. And after they sinned with the chet of the Eitz Hadas, the Nochash, by causing Chavah to sin, by causing Adam and Rishon to sin, he told Bazuhama, he caused their bodies to become impure. And the Gemara tells us that when Bnei Yisrael stood at Har Sinai, the experience of meeting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even before HaKadosh Baruch Hu started to proclaim the Aseret HaDibros at all, just the Hiskarvis with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just meeting up with the Shekhinah, the Gilui Shekhinah, accomplished that Paska Zuhamasim, that Zuhama that was implanted in the human race on the occasion of the Chet of the Eitz Hadas, disappeared from the Jewish people at that time, and they returned, their bodies returned back to the state of the human body that existed in the before the Chet, prior to the Chet. The Gemara says, however, that this state didn't last for too long, because soon after the Kabbalah Sater at Har Sinai, 40 days later, they worshipped the Yegel. And the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Ani amarti lehim atem, evnei alyon kulchem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that they should be like angels, alehim, evnei alyon, they should live forever. However, it didn't work, because they sinned with the Chet HaYegel. That's why they caused that the Zuhama returned back again. So our bodies are the same as the non-Jewish bodies. Everybody has the same Zuhama. But initially, the Gemara says, the Kabbalah HaShchina and the Gilu Shchina that was accomplished at Har Sinai brought about this result of Pascha Zuhamas. The Pasuk tells us in Chumash that more things were accomplished just because of the Gilu Shchina, leaving out the proclamation of the Aseres HaDibros. The Pasuk tells us that the purpose of Maamar HaSinai was L'man tia yirasu yalfenechem levilti sechato, that all of the Jewish people should have yirashamay. And the Gemara comments on that Pasuk, what is in the yirashamay? Zuha busha. The Jewish people are known for the three midas tovos, the three attributes that they have, that they are rachmanim, baishanim, and gomlei chasodim. And these are considered the three traits of the Jewish people, to the extent that there are more rights in Shulchan Aruch and Eben Ezer, that if you have a Jew who is lacking one or more of these midos, he seems to be an achzari, he doesn't have rachmonis at all, or he doesn't have any busha at all, or he's not a gemel chesed at all. So there are more rights, la'aloche, you have to be careful not to marry such a person, you have to check into his ancestry to make sure that he's really Jewish. Because the Torah promised, Lamad, all those who were standing in Har Sinai will definitely have Yirasa Apanechem Levilti Sechato. They will have Yira, and the Gemara comments that Yira means Busha. And the Busha, the Gemara understands, all of these three midos were planted in Bnei Yisrael at that time because of the Gilui Shechina. Then the Pasuk tells us also that the purpose of HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu in the presence of Bnei Yisrael, why was that necessary? Let the Rabbanu Shalom tell the dinim to Moshe Rabbeinu privately, and then he'll tell it over to us. Why was it necessary to tell Moshe Rabbeinu everything in the presence of Bnei Yisrael? Everybody should watch. So the pasuk says, "V'gam v'cho yaminu li'olam." HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises that the descendants of those who stood at Har Sinai will always have emunah; they will never lose their belief in all the Yikorei Hu emunah. And the Rama makes a statement in one of his letters in the Geres Hashmad that if you come across a Jew who doesn't have a munah, you find many Jews in our generation who don't have a munah. In all the generations there were many Jews that didn't have a munah. So the Rama makes a statement, b'yodua, it must positively be that he is not a descendant of those who stood at Har Sinai. He must be a descendant of the Gerim, of those who converted in later generations. He makes such a statement based on the Pasuk in the Chumash, that it says, L'man tihye yirasei alfenechem levilti sechato. this is usually assumed to be the meaning of the piyut that we recite on Pesach night when we recite the Dayenu. So we say, "Ilu kervanu lefnei Hasinai, v'loin asalanu asatora Dayenu." Even if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have brought us to Hasinai, He would have not given us the Torah. That would have been Dayenu. That would have been sufficient for us to be required to be forever grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Forever grateful for what? For a 7-week trip leading up to nothing. He took us out of Egypt and He took us to Hasina. What, just for the tour? To tour the desert. What is accomplished by touring and seeing Hasina if He doesn't give us the Torah? So the answer, the standard answer that's given is no, that more things took place at Hasinai in addition to the Kabbalah Satara, which was the Krisis Bris, which was the Geris. Other things took place. The Achdus also took place. And the Psukim stress, the Yirose Al Panechim, the Yira, the Yira Shemaim, and the Busha, and the Rahman Baisham Gam Lichasodim, and the Emuna, the Pasuk says, Gam Bechoy Yaminu Liyoylam, and the Pasuk Zoham Asim that the Talmud speaks of. The Midrashim and the Nusach of the Tefillah that we recite on Shavuos refer to the Yontav as Man Matan Teresein. It's a time that the Torah was given to Bnei Yisrael. What does it mean the Torah was given to Bnei Yisrael? We were notified of the Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught us the Torah. Shouldn't it be called the time that the Torah was taught to us? Why is it called Matan, the Sinas HaTorah? And the Midrashim speak of a person giving over something to somebody else. If I have money and I give it over to a poor man, I have a sefer and I give it as a gift. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave over the Torah to Bnei Yisrael as a matana. As a matana Torah. What does it mean a matana Torah? That we are now the balabatim. We are the balim over the Torah. So the Gemara says that the Torah was given to the Bnei Yisrael as human beings to understand it and to interpret it according to their understanding. And in every generation, people's minds work differently. We look in Sfarim that were written years ago, we can't begin to understand how they figured this out. How did their minds work in such a way? In every generation, the human mind works differently. In every generation, the Chachmei Hador, the Chachamim, in every generation have to paskin according to their understanding. That's what it means, Matan HaTorah. The Torah was given to the Chachamim, to the Jewish people, that they should paskin according to their Havana, Kifi HaSagosa. And if you have a Sofik in the Din, the Gemara says, after Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, and the Jewish people were in a state of mourning for so long, and then the Yashalas of Yeshua ben Nun, and he didn't know the Dinah. So Bnei Yisrael said, well, ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're a prophet, you're a Navi, ask the Rabban Shalom. So he said, he cannot ask the Rabban Shalom. Loi Bashamayini, the Torah was given to us that we should paskin it according to our human understanding. So if a person doesn't understand, if a person doesn't have enough knowledge, so he can't paskin. But we're talking if a person is qualified, so then he has the right to paskin because he's a human being. And you cannot ask a Navi. You cannot ask someone who's superhuman that he should paskin. You cannot put the shadow into a computer and have a computer give up psak. If the computer is just going to give you a printout of what it says in a certain sefer, that's a different thing. But if you're going to feed the information into the computer is going to paskin. So that's also b'china v'loi b'ashamayimhi. The Torah has to be, the shadows has to be determined by a human being who thinks it out with his human mind. And the Rishonim commented on the Gemara. The Gemara many times will have a suffix, and the Gemara will say, Teku, we don't know what the din is in that case. So some Rishonim used to say that Teku is the Rashi Tevis, is the abbreviation of the statement, Tishbi Yitaritz Kushiv Se'abayis. That all of the sveikas, all of the unclear dinim that appear in the Gemara will be resolved when Eliyahu HaNavi comes. He'll paskinize all of these shayos. So some Rishonim ask on that expression, why do we have to wait till Eliyahu HaNavi will come in the future to paskin all the shayos? The Talmud tells us that there were certain Amoraim who had Gilui Eliyahu. Eliyahu HaNavi would appear to them in the state of a malach and speak to them and carry on long conversations with them. The Gemara in the end of Ksubis and the Gemara in the end of Bavit see at different places. The Gemara beginning of Gittin. The Gemara tells that different people had Gilui Eliyahu. So why do they have to wait till Eliyahu HaNavi will come sometime in the distant future to pass them on the Shilas? Why didn't the Chachmei HaAmoraim, the Chachmei HaTalmud should ask Eliyahu HaNavi and he'll paskin? So the Rishonim give the answer that all of the Hasidish Svarim say that Eliyahu HaNavi appeared to the Chachmei HaGemara in the state of a Malach. He was Eliyahu Malach HaBris. And that to ask a Malach HaDin is no good. That's also a Pchina of Loi B'Shamayimi. The Shilas have to be Oizkit Paskin, they have to be determined by a human being. Because the Torah was given a Matan Torah. Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai. He accepted, he received the Torah, and it belongs to us now. And it's our responsibility as human beings to pass in the Shabbat. In included in this Kabbalah Satori that we have to pass in the Shilas as human beings is the Koyach HaChidish that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Bnei Yisrael and the Chachmei HaTorah in every generation to come up with new dinim. All of the dinim were not given to Moshe Rabbeinu as we observe them today. Everything that Rav Moshe Feinstein said, and everything that the Vilna Gaon said, and everything that the Rambam said, and everything that every Tana and Amora said, was every single thing was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara in Menachos tells the Agarate, the Gemara tells the story the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing Moshe Rabbeinu a vision of what's going to be in future generations, and shows him a vision of Rabbi Akiva giving a shir. Moshe Rabbeinu sits and he said, I've never heard of this stuff. That's the Torah that I got, that I'm giving. Where did he make up all these dinim? I never heard of all that. So he thought that Rabbi Akiva was distorting the tradition that he was giving. Until finally a student asked Akasha, Rabbi Akiva, how can it be? How did you figure this out? Where does this come from? So Rabbi Akiva said, well, that's a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So when he heard that, then he calmed down. Why did he calm down? Because his name was mentioned. He has an honorable mention in Rabbi Akiva's shir. No, so the Mefarshim explained, Moshe Rabbeinu was nervous. Didn't they distort the whole Torah? That doesn't sound like the Torah that I'm giving them. They must have changed it over the generation. But then when Rabbi Akiva said, I'm not changing anything. This is all based on Halacha Moshe Mesinai, as the dinim have evolved over the generations. So then Moshe Rabbeinu was Niskara Daito. He calmed down because he realized that everything is a development of his dinim. So what does the Medrash mean when it says, and this Medrash appears in many, many different sources, Kol Ma'ash Talmid Vasik Asik L'Chadish, anything and everything that every good student will come up with, any good idea. If the fellow is not a Talmid Vasik, so he may say some silly things. But if the person is a Talmid Vasik, he's a learned Talmid Chacham, and he comes up with a good idea in Torah, any good ideas that will be developed in the future, everything was Nemar Lola Moshe Mesinai, everything was told to Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai. So how can it be that the Medrash says, the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't follow what Rabbi Akiva was saying, and he thought that he had distorted the Torah if everything was told to Moshe Rabbeinu? So many explain that the Medrash is not to be taken literally, that everything that any great Talmid Chacham, any correct idea that a Talmid Chacham will come up with in the future was actually told to Moshe Rabbeinu. What it means is, just like in Euclidean geometry, that Euclid developed the principles and he wrote a book. And then in later generations, based on his principles, they developed further theorems and further principles. And one principle leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. And based on all of those principles, after many, many generations, so you can build a bridge and you can do this, you can do various things based on that geometry. So if Euclid would look at the bridge and you tell him that this bridge is based on his geometry, he would say, it doesn't make any sense. What does that bridge have to do with my geometry? But the answer is, each theorem led to another, theorem led to another, theorem led to another, like in mathematics. Once you develop one notion, that leads to another notion, leads to another notion. Everything is based on the original principles. So the same is true regarding Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah, and he got Halachos L'Moshe Mesinai, and he was given the Midos Shatorin and Reshus Ben, the way to approach Torah, and then he developed some of the dinim. In the next generation, they developed more dinim. In the next generation, they developed more dinim. It's a poshut, it's not like that. In every generation, they kept on developing and developing, till Moshe Rabbeinu sees Rabbi Akiva giving a shir of Moshe Rabbeinu would look in our generation, it would even be more unbelievable. This is the Torah that I was given, that I gave to the Bnei Yisrael. He would wonder, how can it be? But after thinking about it for a while, he would come to the realization that everything is a development of what he was given in Har Sinai. So all of the chidushim were, in a certain sense, Nemar Lola Moshe Mesinai. Everything is contained within the laws that Moshe, within all of the principles that Moshe Rabbeinu was given. There is an interesting dispute among the Achronim regarding the nature of chidush, when a chacham in any given generation comes up with a new din. We come up with new dinim in the 20th century. In every century, chachamim in every generation come up with a new din. When these chachamim come up with these new ideas, do we assume that since this is all an outgrowth of Torah, one theorem leads to another theorem, leads to another theorem, and based on the conditions, based on the times, so that the application has to be like so and like so? So does it mean that this was, it's a gloyim nusalam achrei, it turns out now, that this was always the din from the days of Maamar Har Sinai? So the chiddush is just a discovery, but it's not really an invention. We have just discovered now that the din all along from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu always was supposed to be like this. Or should we assume that it's not so? That the koyach hachiddush that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to the Baalei HaMasorah, to the Chachmei HaTorah in every generation, gives them the ability to come up with a new din that only applies mikan al habor. What if the Chachamim in any given generation decide to institute a new Chumra Midirabbanan, or a new Takana Midirabbanan? So that mitzvah only applies from now on, when the rabbis instituted the Yom Tov of Chanukah, or the Yom Tov of Purim. So that's only Midirabbanan. No one's going to say that now it turns out that there was always a mitzvah to celebrate Purim from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. There wasn't. The Takana Midirabbanan only apply from that day on that they instituted. So what about when the Chachamim in every generation develop a new idea in Torah? Should we declare that that's also Mikana Lahabor only? Or should we insist that that has to be in Igloi Milsalem Afreya? So this is a major dispute that the commentaries discuss, the later Achranim discuss, in connection with the Megillas Rus. When Rus HaMoaviyah converted, and she wanted to marry a Jewish man, so there was a major dispute among the Chachamim, because it says in the Torah that Lo Yavo Amoni Moavi B'Kal Hashem, that a convert who comes from the two nations of Ammon and Moab is not permitted to marry a Jewish person. They have to marry Davke, a convert. They themselves have to marry another convert. Normally a convert can marry anybody they want, unless it's a Gioris wants to marry a Kohen, so that's prohibited by the Torah. But if a Ger or a Gioris wants to marry a Levi or a Yisrael, they can marry anybody they want. Unless they come from these two nations of Ammon and Moab, or from one of the nations of Mitzri Ve'edomi, the first three generations, the first two generations may not marry a born Jew, they have to marry a convert. So the Talmud tells us that when Rus HaMoaviyah was interested in marrying a Jewish man, Boaz came up with this new din that wasn't really known previously. He decided, from that time on, he decided that the din of Ammoni and Moavi only applies to the male from Ammon and Moav who convert. But the women, Ammoni v'lo Ammonis, Moavi v'lo Moavis. Rus was a Moaviyah, she was a woman from the nation of Moab. So the prohibition of Ammoni Moavi didn't apply to the women. The other rabbis disagreed with him. And he won out. He discussed it, he debated it, and he won out, and the majority of the Chachamim paskin like him. And he went ahead and he married her, based on his psak. He went ahead, Boaz, and he married Rus HaMoaviyah, and they had descendants who were David HaMelech, and the Melech HaMashiach is going to come from them. All based on that Chiddush psak. So the shaila is, what about those who had married her? What about those Jewish people who had married her before this psak was issued? At the time that it was assumed that it was prohibited. Should we say that at that time they did wrong? Because this Chiddush, that the Mayavi, V'loi Mayavis, was only developed by the rabbis 20 years later. And at the time that they married Bavera. Or should we say no, that at the time that they married, since later it was, this din was developed, that Mayavi, Vlai Mayavis, so we say that that was always a din from the very beginning. From the day the Torah was given, that was always a din. If you're going to say that was always the din, then what are you going to do if there's a situation where there's a machloikis, and in one generation they pass in one way, in the next generation they pass in the other way, in the next generation they pass in the third way, or they revert back to the original psalm, like we said earlier. You have in the Mishnahs like that, you have a Mishnah Rishonim, a Mishnah Achren, and sometimes a third reversal of the position. So you're going to say every time the rabbis reverse the position, so they're saying that for all the generations before them, everything was done wrong. That's a very strange attitude to have. The Talmud describes in Masechet Zvachim the method of pouring the wine on the Mizbeach. The Nisuch HaYayin on the Mizbeach, the way it was done in the Bayis Rishon was completely different from the way it was done in the Bayis Sheni. Bayis Rishon was done for 410 years, one way. And the Bayis Sheni, which lasted longer, was done in a completely different fashion. So the Sfasemis, the Gera Rebbe, in his commentary on Gemara Zochim, points out Akashi. He says, he doesn't understand. You mean to say that for 410 years they did it all wrong? The whole Bayis Rishon was down the drain? They did the Nisach HaYayin wrong for 410 years? They never fulfilled the mitzvah properly, and he doesn't have any answer. So it's generally assumed that it doesn't mean that they did it wrong. The Chachamim in every generation understand the Halach and the Torah according to their perspective of all the putting all the dinim together. So in that generation, if they understood it that way, that was the din. And in the later generation, if they understood it differently, so that was the din. That's what the Talmud says, that Elu v'Elu, Divrei Chaim. It doesn't mean that once you come to the realization later that the din is like this, we realize that it was always like this, and that anyone who ever did Fakirat was always doing it wrong. If you come to the realization that the people in an earlier generation were lacking information, they didn't know the facts, they didn't know scientific facts, historical facts, they were unaware of something, they had a poor text, so then it turns out that they simply made a mistake. But if they had all the facts and all the information, But just their perspective on Torah was such that they understood the din should be like this. And in a later generation, they decided the din should be different. So you cannot say that it's igloi. You shouldn't say that it's igloi. Milsalem Afreya, we decide now that they've always been doing it wrong, and this is the way the din should have always been from the times of Kabbalah Sater. We say no, in every generation, it should be a mecha. The people in that generation have to follow the Torah according to the human understanding of the Chachamim in that generation. And just like you cannot ask of a Malach, you cannot ask of a Novi, Lo Bashamayim, so you cannot ask of a human being who lives in a different generation. That's also a pchina of Lo Bashamayim. The people have to follow the psak of the Chachmei HaTorah of their own generation, not of some other generation. Rashi, in the very opening pasuk of Chumash, quotes a medrash on the first pasuk. Bereshis bara Elokim means b'shvil reshis. The Torah is referred to as reshis, and the Jewish people is referred to as reshis. So the pasuk means to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world for the sake of Bnei Yisrael receiving the Torah at Har Sinai. And when the pasuk continues to say Vayyere Vayveke Yom HaShishi Vayichlu HaShemayim, so the Medrash says on the Yom HaShishi of Vav Sivan, when Bnei Yisrael were mekabel the Torah at Har Sinai, at that time it was Vayichlu HaShemayim Horeth. The whole creation of the world was completed, that up until then the whole world was a little bit shaky. Maybe the whole world would not last too long, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world for the sake of Kabbalah HaTorah. When the Torah was received at Har Sinai, then the world became firmer and it's more steady. It's more kayam. The Gemara understands that this is labdafke Kabbalah Satar Har Sinai. The Gemara says in many agaritas that the world was created for the sake of the Beis Hamikdash, the Shvil Beis Hamikdash. So it's not to be taken as Mamin Har Sinai, it's to be taken as Gilui Shechina. HaKadosh Baruch created the world in order to have a Dira B'Tachtonim, in order that you should be able to be Megala Hishchina in this world. So that is the uniqueness and the specialness of Maimon HaSinai, that it reads Vayevir Hashem al HaSinai. That HaKadosh Baruch brought Hishchina down on this earth, whatever that means, we don't fully understand, but there was a Dira B'Tachtonim, and that's exactly what the Beis HaMikdash is all about. The Beis HaMikdash is Beis Hashem, where HaKadosh Baruch makes a Hashuras HaShchina on this world. So what the Gemara means, the same effect is that the purpose of the Bria was for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring his Shechina down into this world, which was fulfilled initially the first time in Har Sinai, and then in later generations with the Beis HaMikdash, where there was a continuation of the Hashuras HaShechina. And that's exactly what the Ramban means on Chumash when he says that the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash was to maintain, to preserve the state of Maimon Har Sinai. The Hashuras HaShechina that was present in HaSinai continued in the later generations in the Beis HaMikdash. And that's why the Iker of the Beis HaMikdash is the Kodesh HaKadosh and what the Luchos saw, because the Luchos were given in HaSinai. The Luchos represent the fact that there was this Hashuras HaShechina, this Dira B'Tachtayim. So that's why you have to have the Luchos in the Beis HaMikdash. That's the core and the essence of the Beis HaMikdash. The year of learning is over. I want to thank everyone for participating in all of the shiur, and I want to encourage everybody to continue to learn during the summer, even before we start the new Seder of learning for next.